What's up, fools? This is the QTR Podcast. Today is May 27, 2019, and it is fucking early in the morning. You know why? Everybody's got off today because it's Memorial Day, number one. And that means everybody went out last night, number two. Everybody is a term that includes me, number three. And that means generally a lot of us will be waking up with hangovers this morning, number four. If you're one of those people, we're in the same boat. You're probably getting around to listening to this at, noon, 1 o'clock today, 3 o'clock, probably grilling, probably barbecuing, enjoying the holiday. It's 6 a.m., folks. I'm up out of bed, all right? I'm mainlining a Wawa coffee right now for you. And you know what else? When the Montana skeptic says he has time for you, you make time for him whenever that is, even if it's at 6 in the morning when you just left the bar roughly 36 minutes ago. All right. First and foremost, I want to shout out my patrons. Patrons are the people that keep the podcast going. You can donate a small recurring monthly sum through my Patreon. It keeps me in business here at the podcast, so if you enjoy it, I would encourage you signing up as a patron and supporting the podcast. First on the list are my friends over at Quantamize.com, Quantamize, Quantamize is an AI-powered platform that gives you access to over 10,000 stocks, options, and crypto strategies. It has recently been named the number one alternative to a Bloomberg terminal by Benzinga, and their platform is now 100% free. You can use the link in my podcast description. Also, my friends over at Rumorhound.ai. Rumorhound is an AI-powered platform that gives you access to all the M&A rumors that you see floating around online during your trading day on Twitter, in chat rooms, things of that nature. They try to use artificial intelligence to deduce which of these rumors are worth paying attention to and which ones are not, so you can stop losing money like the degenerate that you are. I know you are. In there in the weekly options, I see you. It's gross. Rumorhound.ai. Shoot them a follow on Twitter. You can find them also in my podcast description. Rumorhound.ai. All right. Also, my friends over at HellaBacon.com. Hella Bacon is a bunch of guys in Texas that shoot machine guns out of helicopters. If you have any questions, write your congressman. Check out HellaBacon.com. There's a link to them also in the podcast description. The people that make the podcast go round also, my patrons like Corvus Gold, Matt Zimmer just signed up. Thank you so much, Matt Zimmer. I appreciate you. Nicholas Parks, Nathan Michaud, Chris Bede, Ken R., Chris Boas, and Russ Valenti, Piggly Wiggly, Cool Death, and Nathan Weiss, and Mike. I appreciate you guys very much. And also, lastly, some of my newest patrons. Jonas Giese is with me. Daniel Rust is with me. William Hild, Francis Cagney, Covefi Capital, Yoda Dog, and Steven Rasputic. Thank you guys very much. Before we get Montana Skeptic on the line, two last things right here. Here they come. Ready? Bang. Number one, I'm not an investment advisor. I don't know what I'm talking about. Do your research elsewhere, all right? There's certain people I would like to grab by the fucking collar and shake the shit out of and scream in their face to do your research elsewhere. But if you follow me on Twitter, you could probably guess who some of those people are. But regardless, this is me grabbing all of you by the collar and telling you just don't listen to what I do, okay? And that solves a problem for me. I don't have to listen to any bitching and moaning when I get things wrong, and I don't have to listen to any undulating praise when I get things right. I'm not interested in either one of those. Just leave me alone is what I'm trying to say. Finally, I do encourage a 2-drink minimum for this podcast. Given that it is a holiday morning, I would recommend a Bloody Mary or a mimosa. Make sure you hit that Bloody Mary with some hot sauce, maybe a little shrimp or a slice of bacon in there as well if you want to kick it up a notch. Get about two of those. Those should set you right today. Hit the grill, hit the pool, enjoy the day, and last but not least, please do not forget those who gave their lives for this country, regardless of your political affiliation, regardless of how you feel about the military, any of this. You know what, ladies and gentlemen? A lot of people died so that me and you could be sitting here talking some shit this morning. And I think that that deserves just 2 quick seconds of silence and remembrance of them, which we will observe right now. All right, and now moving on to what you're all here for, the man himself, live from an underground bunker somewhere near the Earth's core, and I'm wondering also if he has a hangover this morning. It's my dear friend, Montana Skeptic. Good morning, sir.
How are you, Chris? And that was a nice thing to do, to take a little time on Memorial Day and remember what it's all about, so thank you for that.
I feel like it's the absolute least that I could do.
Yeah, for all of us, there's never enough we can do. So here we are, as they say in that video, that's the meme with the football coach.
Okay.
Now here we are. This was it was such an ironic week for me, because to watch the Tesla story, because on the one hand, you have Elon Musk writing an email to his employees, which he knows is going to be leaked, and he wants to be leaked so that he can counter a narrative. But what's he countering? What narrative was he countering? He's countering the narrative of the leaked investor conference call on May 2nd before the capital raise,
right,
which was harmful to him. We can talk about that. And the Adam Jonas transcript and audio, which was also leaked. And I think that the leakers on the other side of the argument, the bear side, are just, they just have the momentum with them right now. There's just not enough that leaky Elon can do to counter the narrative, to counter the counter narrative anymore. It's the story is taking hold, and that's the story that Adam Jonas is telling us. He's, you know, that guess what? We have gone, as he said, from a growth story to a distressed credit and restructuring story. So, I mean, that Adam Jonas, I don't know if you heard his call.
I did. It was morose.
It was, let me say, it was more bearish than anything I've ever written. And coming from any Tesla bear, it would have been, you know, sneered at. Coming from Adam Jonas, wow. Because what he said is, look, the problem, and this is nothing new to you, right, Chris? There's really nothing new here. People are finally realizing what we've been talking about for several years.
But that in and of itself is new, right? To have a wave of sell-side analysts kind of see the light in succession last week is new.
Because the problem is, and Jonas hit the nail on the head, at the heart of this, he said, is demand. Okay? There's a lack of demand for these cars that people were supposed to have an infinite demand for. It's not a production problem. Tesla's making more of these than it can sell. Nobody wants to buy them. And you had demand drop from, I mean, deliveries drop from 90,000 in Q4 to 63,000 or whatever it was in Q1. And you know, on top of that, It's a story of falling average sales price. And in Q2, you know, Tesla's now slashing prices, adding incentives, free supercharging to move the metal. It'll do more of that, maybe. Maybe it will get to 80,000 deliveries. But the ASPs are going to be dramatically lower. The Q2 financial results are going to be terrible. And I think then all these people who are saying, well, it's just because the boats are still on their way to China.
Right.
That's not going to be plausible any longer.
Let me just go back to something you just said, giving Jonas credit about, hey, you know, he's seen the demand story dry up. And I just want to say, you know, you saw the demand story dry up. Okay. It's one thing for Jonas to come out last week and say, kind of now, hey, all right, and I give him credit where it's due for starting to see the light. But these are things that you said 6 months ago.
Well, okay, let's put you in quotation marks. Me and a lot of other people have been saying.
That's right, but you included in that group.
Yeah, there's the whole Tesla Q group has realized this for a long time, as have some other analysts. I mean, Ryan Brinkman at J.P. Morgan, John Murphy at Bank of America, Brian Johnson at Barclays, all of them have been worried about this and writing about this, but they've been, you know, overrun by the great momentum of the bull case from others. Adam Jonas is an interesting guy. You know, my erstwhile colleague at Seeking Alpha Cover Drive has always been fascinated with Jonas, because while he thinks on the one hand Jonas is just in la la land with his ideas about Tesla mobility, on the other hand, there's a curious way in which Jonas is very astute. And Jonas has been begging Tesla to find a strategic partner for a long time, and talking about a SpaceX tie-up, which, you know, I don't see it, but given the other alternatives, it's about all that's left. And so I thought Jonas was just spot on with this. I mean, I've asked you to put some links on when you put this up at Twitter.
Yeah, I got the email.
The first one is a transcript that Paul Huttner prepared, and it's valuable. It's just to read the transcript is staggering. And among other things, you know, Jonas talks about how the debt markets are, you know, it's the stress is starting to show. It has a long way to go, but the bonds that went out at 105, when you figure in the optionality, mm-hmm. are now down to 87. The 2025s are trading at a 700 plus basis point spread to treasuries.
Right.
The yield on those things is now above 9%. The credit default swaps are more expensive than ever. They show a suddenly statistically high probability of Tesla default. And those are stunning things. And as Jonas said, you know, and if you look at Europe, demand is just dead for, especially for the high-end Teslas. But the stock of backlog is exhausted, and the organic demand is tinier than anyone except us imagined it would be. So,
yeah, a lot of really, longs were definitely Googling credit default swaps for the first time last week. After Jonas made mention of it on that call. The call was fascinating. It was, you know, again, it was interesting to see a bunch of sell-side names come out in succession. We had Wedbush and Citigroup and Morgan Stanley all in the same week, I think all within 3 or 4 days of each other. But then to listen to Jonas's tone on the call, it seemed like he had just resigned himself. You know, he opened the call, as you know, by saying 2018 was, we saw some cash generation, we saw cars being sold, we thought, all right, you know, there's something here. In 2019, he said, started with a massive $700 million net loss in Q1, no demand for the cars, and then he said, man, there's really no interest in the Model Y either, which I thought was wonderful.
Well, I mean, how true is that? That Model Y reveal, it was like a slightly overweight Model 3 where the third row was deceitful and utterly unusable. They haven't done any development work on that car. And as Jonas said, you know, there's no excitement at all for the right. Model Y. Hey, by the time it gets here, Chris, the alternatives from VW, from even GM, Ford, we see it with Hyundai already and Kia. The alternatives are going to be so much more compelling than any Model Y Tesla can put out there. You know, of course, a huge problem for Tesla is the brand destruction that's happened with the reliability issues.
Well, and as they continue to make cuts to their infrastructure as a company and their staff, those issues, you know, these are kind of like residual passive issues that the company continues to have, right? While you're dealing, trying to plug this fucking working capital hole in the side of the ship right now, they're also sacrificing, you know, their service. They're sacrificing customer support with all of these layoffs. And so these things are all kind of happening in the background too, in addition to what's front and center.
Yeah. Yep. And, you know, when Elon Musk is reduced to taking to Twitter to have deny reports that there's been a cutback in toilet paper supplies, the narrative has really changed at that point, right? He has to debunk the Fred Lambert going after Elon Musk for, you know, talking about employees who report that their budgets have been slashed and there's not toilet paper. I'm sure they didn't specifically cut toilet paper out, but it's, you know, that's what we've come to. Instead of Elon Musk being there saying, you know, I'm going to colonize Mars with the Model Y, it's now, hey, I didn't, there's still toilet paper available for my employees.
You got some problems you need to handle here on Earth first before you start taking on Mars.
Crazy. Crazy stuff.
Just to go back real quick to the Model Y before we move on. I mean, to me, that reveal was fascinating. It was, you could see through the live video stream that there was kind of very tempered excitement. It didn't really seem to be the maniacal kind of cult-like excitement that there's been at some of these events. And when that thing rolled out on stage, I said, that's a fucking Model 3. I mean, it couldn't be clearer to me. My analysis of the situation is they needed to, you know, smash and grab for some deposits. So they threw a new bumper on it and tried to put a third seat in it. And it's a Model 3.
Yeah. And I suspect that those deposits are some of the, quote, net new orders that Musk tweeted about when he said we have 50,000 net new orders so far in this, you know, through May of Q2. Because they probably got a smattering of Model Y orders, nothing compared to what they saw with the Model 3. Yeah, people were pretty down about it.
Do you want to talk about that email?
Well, I want to talk about first there's some things I want to talk about. Write these down so I don't forget them. I want to talk about Kathy Wood and Tasha Keeney and their model.
Already on my list. Believe it or not.
Okay, good. That needs to be on your list. And I want to talk about Tesla safety.
Okay.
But first I want to talk about the incredible investor call on May 2nd that was a prelude to the capital raise the next day. And, you know, Laura Kolodny wrote a very detailed article about it at CNBC, and she published it on May 2nd. Anyone who wants to know most of what happened on that call can read her article, and it's Paul Huttner put up some excerpts of the audio. There's nobody who has a full audio recording, but Laura's story has been 100% substantiated so far. And what happened on that call is Musk, you know, you have a prospectus that doesn't say anything about robo-taxis.
Right.
Questions, Citi and Goldman Sachs sponsor this call for some of their big banana investors, private call. People emailed some questions in, and they just asked him the questions, and he would answer the questions with no follow-up at all. But the way it went, somebody said, you know, why are you raising capital now? That was the first question. Why now? And Musk said, well, we don't need it. This is just as a cash buffer in case there's a recession or in case we see the, you know, total auto demand worldwide drop. Now, you have him saying that on May 2nd. There's no safe harbor for saying that on May 2nd.
Right.
And then writing an email a few weeks later saying, we are running out of cash. We're burning cash so fast that I'm going to approve every expense over $1 million. And, you know, well, our CFO is young Zach, and I'm going to go on every 10th page and make sure he's done it right. I mean, it has to be the case that Tesla desperately needed the cash and that was 100% lie. Again, this guy is making it impossible for any strategic buyer to want to come and acquire this company, even at a low, low value, because he's created so many contingent liabilities and ticking time bombs just with 10b5 liability and derivative lawsuit liability. And, you know, class action liability. He's told lies to invest. We still haven't worked through the private litigation, of course, on the funding secured. That's an enormous risk. And now he's added another one with that lie. But what was even more fascinating about the call is that people tried to ask him about how is demand? What's your order book look like? And he didn't have at that point some carefully crafted nonsense about net new orders, a brand new metric.
Right.
But he said he started stammering and stuttering. And Zach Kirkhorn at this point interjected himself and said, Elon, I just want to remind everyone that we just reaffirmed our Q2 guidance of between 90 and 100,000 deliveries. And we just reaffirmed our full year guidance of between 360,000 and 400,000 deliveries.
Love it.
And that's all you're going to, that was all you would hear. People started to ask about gross margin. And Musk said, well, you know, actually, they said, are you going to achieve 25% like you said you were? And he said, you know, we'll feel pretty good if we get to 20%, because as you know, they were really closer to 16% when you figure in the when you do it without the regulatory credits. But he said, but you're asking the wrong question. Stop asking me about the auto business. We're not an auto company anymore. We are a robo-taxi company. And in a year, you're going to see 500,000 to 1 million robo-taxis on the road. They will be making money for their owners. And these cars are going to appreciate, you know, a car that's 3 years old with my hardware and my software in it is going to appreciate. It'll be worth $25,000, you know, just as a normal car, but it's going to be worth $150,000 to $250,000 as a robo-taxi. And that is the new Tesla story. We are not an energy company, okay? We are no longer a battery storage company, and we're not an auto company. So stop talking about the auto business. We are now the disruptive robo-taxi company. By the way, the word robo-taxi appeared nowhere in the prospectus for this capital raise. That is such an enormous disconnect. This guy just made a 180-degree pivot in the entire business plan of Tesla. He left behind everything. And then the next day, you know, all these underwriters are out there peddling this garbage. And who buys it? Well, the people who bought it have taken a big haircut. Fortunately, the buyers of the equity were probably buying it to hedge their convert exposure. And they've probably done well, because as somebody pointed out, the equity has decreased even more than the debt has decreased. So shorting the stock to hedge your convert is probably going to work out for them. But there's no institutions that want any more of this garbage. And, you know, Charlie Grant wrote a great story which appeared on the front page of the weekend Wall Street Journal. And it basically said that it didn't use the Paul Soros reflexivity language, but it said, in essence, Tesla has been a reflexivity story. Because the sentiment is so good, the share price is high, it's easy to raise capital. Now that sentiment has changed and you can't raise capital nearly as easily, it feeds back on itself. So I think that's right.
So just to go back to the email that you're talking about, I mean, I think the word that Musk used was hardcore cost cuts.
And right.
He said we have to make hardcore cost cuts. You know, just days after saying on this investor call, like, yeah, money, we don't need money. You know, we're just, like you said, we're using this as a capital buffer. And for those that don't understand why the difference between what's stated in the prospectus and what's stated on the call is such a big deal. Obviously, number one, because you're giving two different ideas as to what you're going to do with this capital to investors. That's number one. But number two is, you know, the prospectus is really the legal guts of a financing, right? So the prospectus is the document that the securities attorneys have to sit down with the CEO, with the CFO, with the other C-suite executives, and they have to put down for disclosure purposes, for legal purposes, exactly why they're raising the money, what the capital will be used for, what the state of the company's financials are in at the time that they're raising money, etc. And it's basically a way of laying all the cards on the table for participants or prospective participants in the financing. So for them to offer this document to prospective investors, like you just said, that doesn't mention anything about robo-taxis. And then for this guy to come out and make this, as you called it, 180-degree turn on the call is alarming for several reasons, right? If you're an investor, it's alarming because you're getting two completely different stories. Like me saying to you, Mr. Skeptic, let me borrow $100,000 because I want to go open a car wash. And then you give me $100,000 and I turn around and I just buy a new Audi with it. And you're like, well, what's that? And we're like, well, we had a pivot in strategy. And you're like, well, that wasn't in the documents. You know, and this has been a penchant of Musk's for years. And the deviation, Mr. Skeptic, between what he has said as he's riffing and fucking freestyling on these calls versus what's being disclosed. I feel like that gap continues to widen.
Yeah, well, let's be clear. The prospectus, in terms of the use of funds, it said they would be used for, among other things, general corporate purposes, which can mean, you know, covering your cash flow burn.
Right.
So the omission in the prospectus is the robo-taxi pivot, as you say, a huge 180-degree pivot. But then to say that on the call, to say verbally, orally, we don't need the cash, it's just a buffer, that's different from what's in your prospectus. But that statement standing alone, that's new, brand new guidance. Your prospectus has already been published, and now you're offering brand new guidance. This is just a cash buffer for us. And you're going to have to now show that something changed in the 2 weeks between the time you said that and the time you sent the email saying, hey, guys, it's going to be, you know, one-ply toilet tissue instead of two-ply toilet tissue, which a friend of mine said that's a human rights violation. What had changed in those 2 weeks? Nothing had changed in those 2 weeks. And this is, as you say, this guy just riffs. It's in his DNA. He can't help making stuff up. With again, the complete absence of any evidence of corporate governance that's meaningful at Tesla. So,
do you think he understands? I guessed in a podcast maybe a year ago that there's part of me that entertains the idea that he just doesn't. A, he doesn't care, obviously, to learn about how disclosure works and how it's kind of a layered series of precedents that you set as you disclose things, but also that he just doesn't understand it. I mean, do you think that's the case, or do you think he's just outright lying and he knows he's lying?
Look, he understands a lot. For another beautiful part of this Adam Jonas call, Jonas said, you know, the Solar City acquisition, it was a controlled detonation.
Right.
We had to find a way to wrap up Solar City quietly. So the best thing to do, so that Musk could continue to raise money in SpaceX and Tesla without reputational harm, was to do you can see I'm pouring a cup of coffee, was to do this acquisition where we could, you know, then quietly suffocate the thing, which is exactly what's happened. Musk knew full well. He knew full well that was exactly what was happening. We have correspondence between him and, you know, the Reeves, his cousins, showing that they knew that this was this had to be done as a bailout. So I think, but there is maybe a part of Musk that is so, you know, when you surround yourself with sycophants and yes men for so long, there's a real twisted aspect to him. I don't want to psychologize too much, but I would commend people to the Ashley Vance biography. It's so illuminating. Musk could never stand it when someone else was getting credit for stuff instead of him, all him. He's treated employees and associates abysmally forever. Now, you know, Vance wrote his book several years ago, and Vance bought into the entire hagiographic picture of Musk, and it's regrettable that he was bamboozled like that. I suspect the book would be different today, but it is very illuminating because he talked to lots of former Tesla employees and people who had been involved with Musk in his earlier ventures. And the guy is he is so narcissistic, I think, that his lens of seeing the world is that any sins he commits are for the greater good of everyone.
Right.
So, yeah.
Right. Let's go back to the email that was leaked now, kind of to move along the chronology of what we're talking about. So then this email comes out as the stock starts to tank last week after the sell side comes out and just pretty much takes a dump all over the company. The stock loses its bid, drops from 200 to, I think it hit as low as 181 in the pre-market session on Thursday, perhaps. And then all of a sudden, this email, this leaked email, another leaked email, starts making its rounds.
Listen, get ready for this and get ready for more China pumps. There's going to be a lot of this happening. What happened is we had that Consumer Reports article, too, which was devastating. It said, look, this autopilot is so far from being ready for prime time. It, by the way, autopilot meaning even the limited safety features that are not, that Tesla still calls autopilot. It's dangerous. It shouldn't be relied upon. It's being oversold. This is a terrible thing that Tesla is doing to oversell this product. And that was a punch in the gut to Tesla. And then you had the Adam Jonas call that gets leaked. And so you've got Mustang. Holy crow, I've got to do something to counter the narrative here. I'm going to seek quietly, basically reassure everyone that we're going to hit 90,000 deliveries this year. So we'll come up with, we'll confect some math that if you run it out to the end of the quarter, would suggest that we're going to do 90,000 deliveries, and we'll get this email out there and get it leaked. And that's exactly what he did. And but the half-life of the Musk pumps is becoming shorter, shorter and shorter and shorter, and it hasn't worked to change it. There's a great thread up this morning from a guy named Paolo Macro. I'm sure that's not his real name, but and he talks about how when things unravel, that can happen faster than you expect. And he's got a great quote in there. He said he thinks it was David Einhorn who once said something like, "A crisis goes from the impossible to the inevitable without ever stopping at the probable." And that, which is and he's talking about how that we are all so anchored to what we've seen as this elevated share price for so long that it's hard to it's hard to drop that anchor and understand that this thing could move down fast once the entire foundation of the Tesla story is this cult-like faith, and there will always be some cultists. But when the growth narrative part of it is just undeniably, shattered, then you're going to see some big movement in a lot of these institutions that may have gotten in where they can still take a profit or break even or at least cut their losses. And
Well, I want to ask you about that, but I real quick want to just unpack a little bit more about the email. Now, you have a 3 or 4 decade long experience as a litigator, and you have extremely credible gravitas and pedigree as a litigator. My question to you is, did you examine the word choice used in the leaked email? And I wanted to kind of get your you bounced on it real quickly before. You said net new orders. What is net new orders, Mr. Skeptic? What the hell is that?
I would guess that people who are Tesla investors or board members or analysts called up and said, "Elon, what does this mean? Net new orders? Can you spell it out for me?" There's no good answer. I suspect it includes net new orders for this quarter. Okay, it's a yet another brand new metric from Musk, and the people who are watching Tesla demand are saying, "Yeah, we see an uptick in May in U.S. Model 3 deliveries. Europe is worse than ever. The story of the S and the X there continues to Audi is outselling Audi and Jag are outselling the S and the X by 2.5 to 1 in Norway, and by 8 to 1 in the Netherlands. The S and the X are just yesterday's news, and that's where the margin is. And the even though Tesla has gotten an uptick in Model 3 orders, the mix has gotten much worse. Very hard to be profitable. Chris, I am sure that in some hyper-technical way, Musk's number adds up, okay? But when you see the deliveries in Q2, I'll go out on a limb and I'll say, unless there's even more price cutting than there's already been, Tesla is not going to get to 90,000, and it will struggle to get to 80,000, and it will get there even if it just keeps slashing prices. And then Musk will say, people might say, 80,000, that's better than we thought. The bulls are saying 75 or 70 or even 65, the bears. It's the Q2 financial results,
right,
that will be so devastating. Tesla will deliver more cars in Q2 than Q1, and it will lose as much or more money. Now, how do you, you know, at this point, A, Tesla's going to have to revise its full year guidance. B, the analysts who all have predicated their models on 350 or 360,000 deliveries this year are going to have to yet again, always playing catch up,
right,
you know, slash their estimates. And, you know, not only will 2019 EPS forecast go negative, but they will for 2020 as well. And I don't see that there's, you know, we've talked about this before. It's the long operatic death, but there don't seem to me to be many more measures left in this aria at that point.
Well, lest we forget too. I mean, you're sitting here talking about the company posting a loss that could be on a par with the Q1 loss, which was an astounding $750 million. Lest we forget. I mean, weren't we told this year we would be cash flow positive all four quarters?
Nothing but profits all the way down from here on out, guys.
That's it. Yeah. And we're sitting here talking about a $700 million loss in Q1. Right. And it's just, at some point, even the retail investors that don't understand how a P&L works are going to start to get wise that that's so far at odds with what they've been told. And I just want to go back again to what you just said about that Einhorn statement about things, you know, going from, you know, impossible to inevitable.
Sorry. Did you say Heinlein? I think he said David Einhorn, you know, the
Einhorn,
great shirt
right.
seller. Yeah.
Yeah, that's what I said.
But it sounds like something Robert Heinlein would have said to David.
But I think you make such a great point, and I'd be interested for your take on how the psychology of retail investors. Obviously, I know you're not a psychologist, okay? But let's talk about the fact that a large portion of the company's shareholder base is generally unsophisticated investors. Many of them have financed their vehicle purchases with appreciation in Tesla's stock. You know, there's some astute investors, there's some institutional investors, but as you said, there's many cultists and many sycophants. And I mean, don't you feel like there's going to be a, what do they call that in astrophysics? Like a point of escape velocity, or when they get to a point of no return, you know, maybe it's 137, maybe it's 99. I don't know what's going to cause a psychological breakdown, but don't you feel like there'll be a point where this takes off in terms of.
The sociologists call it a tipping point, I guess.
Tipping point. Right. There you go.
You know, there's a guy at Twitter, which Twitter has become such a fascinating content generator. I think his name is Jay Shiver, Schiver, heavily followed guy, bright guy. And he pointed out that the research that they have done shows that, 40% of the retail investors, some enormous number, maybe it's 40% of the car owners are also investors in Tesla.
Right.
There's a big overlap there. And now we see reports from people. By the way, if you want to see sentiment change, the TMC boards, people are posting, you know, snippets from what the people at the Tesla Motors Club forum are saying. They all get together as investors and they talk about how the stock can only rise forever and buy the dip. Lately, sentiment has really changed over there. And there are people who are saying, this is just killing me. Elon, would you say something, do something? Now I'm going to have to cancel my Model S order because my stock has dropped so much.
Right.
You know, there are some people who have invested close to all their, some in some cases, 100% of their retirement savings in Tesla stock. It's staggering. And there's going to be a lot of roadkill. And it's sad because, as you say, these are people who have no idea what a collateral default swap is. You know, they have no idea about the relationship between price and yield and bonds. These things are mysteries to them. You know, they have, if you tried to say to them, you know, Benjamin Graham has taught that, you know, the value of an equity is the stream of future revenues, you know, discounted to present value at some number we can all talk about. They would say, what? No, it's not. It's, what does that mean? It's it's sad, but you see it everywhere.
Well, I would say, if I had to guess, I'd say half the people that own this stock don't even know that it isn't a profitable company. And I think that that's a product of a major disservice that's been done with this company and continues to be done by financial media. There's great people out there doing great stuff, but also the fact that the average mom and pop investor has not had it hammered into their brain that this is a company that's incinerating capital.
Yeah. Well, and let's talk about Cathie Wood for a moment.
Okay.
She has become she has become the most prominent Tesla bull, I'm told. I don't watch television, but on CNBC, evidently she appears all the time, everywhere, along with Tasha Keeney. And the two of them are promoting what they call their battle-tested financial model, which Cathie Wood famously said, she was asked in a debate with me at the Robinhood Investor Conference in October, is there anything that could make you change your mind about Tesla? And I was asked first, and I said, yes, if Tesla were to show a GAAP profit for four straight quarters, I would say I was wrong about everything. This is a sustainable company, and I was just dead wrong, and I'd have to change my mind.
Right.
And Cathie Wood said, no, nothing could ever change my mind. In fact, we have, in our battle-tested model, we have put in the most bearish assumptions we possibly can, and the lowest price we can possibly get to, the floor is $400, and our five-year target is $4,000. That's where we see it going. Well, Tasha Keeney put something up on the web or social media saying, "Look, we've made our model available, so you can take a look at it yourself, and you'll see how." And we welcome all comments. And a guy named Kubiko.
Yep.
And another guy named Peter Kay looked at it and in no time flat found that it was hideously flawed. I mean, just the mistakes in it are so massive that honestly, I don't know how they avoid getting sued by investors who heard them talk about this model. It is utterly inept. And I've asked you to, when you put up this podcast, I want you to post that link from Kubiko and from Peter Kay, where they just go through and, you know, they looked at this thing for a few minutes and found horrible mistakes in it. So who is going to call Cathie Wood or Tasha Keeney? I mean, I put it at Cathie's the leader here. Who's going to call her to account? Is somebody on CNBC going to say, Cathie, people have looked at your model and it has these massive mistakes?
Right.
We plugged in zero sales and still got a $47 billion market cap. How can you be here promoting this model? Do you have any apologies to make to our viewers? Do you have any apologies to make to your investors? Are you going to write to your investors and tell them about all these mistakes? I mean, when do these people ever become accountable? Is it up to private litigants to do it, or will the media finally just do a tiny bit of homework and start doing it? Listen, that's not fair. There have been some great people writing in the media who have been all over Tesla, some for a long time, like Charlie Grant, some a little more recently. But, you know, the New York Times has Neil Boudet, the LA Times has Russ Mitchell, CNBC has Laura Kolodny. Business Insider has Lynette Lopez. There are other examples of people just doing, and Bloomberg, even Dana Hull has been on top of this story, I think, doing very fair work and naturally being attacked viciously by the people who want to blame someone else
and
for
Elon Musk's
problems.
And Elon Musk's mom.
Yeah, May Musk. Yeah. I hope that that's not really May Musk. I hope it's really Elon, because if May Musk is that vicious, nasty, and mendacious, that's a sad thing. Then it means to me that genetically Elon Musk was doomed from the very get-go.
I don't think she understands what's going on. I think she's part – if that is her, okay, she's – number one, she's riding for her son, right? Number two, I don't think she understands. I think she's part of this group of people that believe that the cause is so altruistic that why would anybody care if they don't turn a profit? Why would anybody criticize the company? As you said earlier, they feel as though it gives them carte blanche to just do whatever the hell they want and not face any consequences.
Yeah.
Because of the mission.
The mission. Yeah, what I worry about is when it goes down there, you know, there are going to be a lot of angry people, and they, instead of looking, instead of, as this Paolo Macro wrote, instead of looking in the mirror and saying, it was me, or I was lied to by Elon, they're going to say, these short sellers and their hatefulness has brought down the company and caused me all this pain.
Right.
And I'm going to blame them. And, you know, the people who lose $200 million, I don't worry about them as much. I worry about the people who lost $20,000 life savings. They're going to flail and lash around because they'll never change their beliefs about this. It was all faith-based to begin with, and if you have toppled my God, then I hate you. That's how it's going to be.
Just going back to the model again real quick. You know, CNBC had Cathie Wood on subsequent to people pointing out on Twitter that the model was flawed. And my friend Kubiko, who I happen to believe is a genius, and I know he spent, I think, probably 45 seconds on the model playing with it, because he'd sent me a message saying, well, I'm thinking about going in and doing a deep dive on it. And then he said, well, I don't have the time to do it. I'm going to look at it for, you know, 2 minutes. And that was when he came up with this formatting error in the PP&E line, where I guess they had changed the number formatting, the numerical formatting, to make a PP&E assumption of $19,000 instead of $19 million or $19 billion or whatever it was supposed to be. Subsequent to that, they let her back on the air on CNBC, and nobody brought it up. Nobody challenged her on that. And you can't tell me these guys aren't sitting on Twitter reading this stuff, because you can see it on their computer screens on TV.
Yeah. No, well, I mean, they need to do it. It's not going to be Phil LeBeau who does it. That guy is just honestly too hopelessly stupid to I think he's too hopelessly stupid to understand a spreadsheet. What an embarrassment for CNBC to have him as an auto analyst. But by the way, it seems like a nice guy. He's always got that idiotic smile on his face, and it's like beatific happiness when he's close to Elon Musk. But he's an idiot. And but there are smart people at CNBC. Let's see if any of them have the moxie to challenge Cathie on this. I hope so. It would possibly redeem their sycophantic coverage of this company and this CEO for the past 4 or 5 years.
Yeah, and they're also giving her an extraordinary amount of airtime, and they're not really pushing back on anything. I mean, I've watched a couple of – they had an analyst on talking to Tasha Keeney a couple months ago about the – I think they were talking about the price of the credit default swaps or the bonds. I can't remember. Yeah, this was like 2 weeks ago. Because the chart on the screen had the equity at 199, so it must have been 2 weeks ago. And they asked this guy, you know, what is the debt market telling you here? Do these bonds deserve to be trading, you know, with a junk rating? And the guy said, absolutely. You know, the yield here is indicative of the risk that people are taking on for investing in this paper, etc. And then they turned to Tasha Keeney, and without asking her about the specifics relating to the credit default swaps or the bonds, they were like, so, you know, you've been positive on this name for a while. What's new?
So she does her hair flip and says, this is a story about innovation. Hair flip. Innovation. Okay. I saw a clip of that. I think it was even more recent. But I mean, Tasha has a lot of explaining to do about that truly garbagey Excel spreadsheet or whatever they had there that they put up that's just – I'm telling you, it's malpractice.
Why would you do that, anyways? Say you're running a book, right? I mean, what you do? I mean, I'm sure you have models that you use internally that you use to invest personally and invest, you know, for your job. You know, why would you turn around and put those on the web?
I guess they were so confident that about it that they thought, hey. It's frightening to think, but they are that stupid. Okay, that's the only conclusion I can come up with. To have the whole, you've been talking about this model forever. You premised your share price on it. We've heard about it for years. nobody's checked it any more carefully than this. That's all you got, Kathy. That's all you got, Ark. I mean, sure, you look like heroes in this endless bull market, but and you know, let's face it, Ark has got some impressive investment results, but I don't think it was based on sophisticated financial modeling. That's for sure.
Well, and to say that it's been battle tested, and then to put it out there, and then be like, yeah. Oh well, you know, forgot to carry the one.
Listen, I want to mention, I want to talk about safety for just a minute.
Sure.
Can we do that?
Yeah, of course.
So a link I didn't send you, but that is a terrific link. It's called, I think it's called Tesla Deaths, DEATHS.com. And this Elon Bachman has created it. And it has various tabs. One shows all of the fatalities involving Teslas, including those where people died in the Tesla as a driver, as a passenger, or they died in the other car, or a bicyclist or a pedestrian was hit. So it lists them all, and it's a big number. And the statistics on Tesla safety already are, I think, alarming. If you compare Teslas to cars that are luxury sedans that cost as much, okay, and are of the same vintage, Teslas are three times more dangerous than the rest of that market. Three times more dangerous. Musk likes to compare it to, you know, all cars on the road in the last 15 years. That's not the right comparison. And he's, you know, really distorted the statistics about how frequently Tesla deaths occur. And that TeslaDeaths.com site is a terrific site. It has a link for resources where there are articles about this that deconstruct the statistics. And now you have and so I encourage people to explore that. You have now the stories of Teslas erupting into flames after being charged, okay, several incidents of that. By the way, Audis aren't doing that, the I-Paces aren't doing that, these are Teslas. And there's a fellow named Phoenix who knows a lot about batteries, who believes that this is probably a consequence of something called dendrites that come off of the lithium ion cells over time, and that, you know, you need a really sophisticated battery management program to manage this. If you charge at high amperage or high voltage, you're going to increase the risk of battery degradation, and these dendritic growth happening, where you can easily have shorts and you know, out of control fires. Now Tesla has said, well, we've scaled back the charging levels at 17% of our superchargers. Well, why not 100%? This is like another over-the-air patch. I think Tesla knows it's got a problem with these batteries. I think you're going to see more and more of it as these cars get older and have this dendritic, you know, lithium ion growth. And it's something to watch. Now, add on top of that, this autopilot recklessness. You know, people are putting up videos at Twitter of their drive. They're in their Tesla driving, and it wants to merge into a tractor trailer truck. It wants to drive them off the road. They have to grab it and seize control. It fails to see a car right ahead of them, and they have to hit the brakes. This stuff that he's selling as enhanced driving, calling it autopilot, is not even nearly as good as what other automakers are selling, and other automakers have been much more modest about it. The idea that he'll have software ready in a year for full self-driving, which is what he promised, that's just, this guy is at this point has become a public nuisance. And no, I mean that seriously. He is allowing people to have faith in this technology that is utterly unwarranted. People will die believing this guy's lies, and it's a terrible thing.
It is. That's what I would say. Yeah. It is. It's you know, I did a whole somber podcast, I think like probably 100 podcasts ago, about autopilot and exactly what you're talking about. And you know, it doesn't feel like they've made any progress since then either. I want to go back to the battery issue that you just brought up. You know, the first thing I think of when you mention that is, it brings me back to the allegations made by Martin Tripp, right, when he came out and said that they're reusing battery cells and they're putting defective battery cells into these cars, and essentially as they go out there, it's just a game of Russian roulette as to which Model 3 is driving around with a damaged battery pack. And I can't help but think of that. I don't know if it holds water, but those allegations certainly echo in my mind when you hear about these.
Yeah, those. I think that those are two separate issues.
Are they okay?
Yeah, Martin Tripp, who's as we know a dangerous saboteur who's going to shoot up the factory or something, right? Is that what Tesla said? Marty Tripp pointed out that there were damaged modules. The modules had been punctured, and Tesla said, "We'll just patch them up and put them in cars." And there were some number of cars. I forget if it's a number in the range of 1,000 to 2,000. Maybe it was only several hundred, where Tesla allowed that to happen, and those cars went out the door. And that was there was no issue there with the cells per se, except to the extent that damaging the module could very well have caused cell damage inside. The problem, that the bigger long-term problem, is these dendrites that grow on lithium-ion cells, especially when they are charged at these high amperage or high voltage. You know, battery charging management is a very complex science. And it may be that as these Tesla batteries age, particularly if they've had a lot of supercharging, that there are going to be problems with the batteries. How else do you explain these cars bursting into flames after supercharging? And that's a huge risk. And, you know, it's a risk for Tesla with the cylindrical cells, because every car has thousands of those cylindrical cells. Maybe less of a risk with, say, Audi or Jag, or Porsche or Mercedes, which is using a prismatic or pouch architecture. So there are only several hundred of the cells instead of, you know, tens of thousands in each car. But something to watch. It's another yet another in the long list of risks to being a Tesla investor or a Tesla driver or anywhere near one of those cars.
Well, and as a strapping on your legal hat again, I want to ask you, what does it mean that the contributor to Consumer Reports is a former NHTSA head? And the fact that this guy came out and publicly said, and his words were that, you know, the company is using human beings as guinea pigs. Yeah. And that he believed autopilot should be recalled to some degree. What does that do legally, if you're the current NHTSA head, what kind of pressure does that put on you to hear, really, your one of your peers at the agency or one of your former peers say something like that? I mean, how much longer can they let this go? How much longer can the NHTSA ignore this?
Another cup of coffee, Chris.
That's all right. I'm on number two also.
One would hope that they're looking at this and. I don't stake my investing thesis on any governmental agency doing anything to stop this. The markets are going to have to stop it. It would be nice if the NHTSA would do its job. It would be nice if they would say, stop calling it autopilot. Don't use that name. Stop making these inflated claims about what it can do. You know, record a public service announcement, since you've been, Elon, on television with your hands off the wheel saying, see, mom, look, mom, no hands, with, you know, reporters in the car. Maybe you need to now do a public service announcement where you say, listen, that was a dangerous thing and no one should ever take their hand off the wheel.
Right.
I think the market is going to take – Consumer Reports is very influential. Investors are going to see that what Tesla has now done is pivot to a story where they will have software so sophisticated that the cars will be capable of full self-driving, no human driver, in a year, and that these cars will make money for their owners while the owners sleep. And that story is so preposterous that I think even the market sees through it. And this time, you know, instead of making claims where there's nobody to push back, now you have Waymo and Cruise and Navigant saying, whoa, 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 whoa. You know, we are proponents of autonomous driving. But the worst thing you can do is to make inflated claims about right. where we are right now and how quickly we can move to where we finally need to get. And they are saying, Elon, you are full of it. Okay, you're just full of it. They have much more money to spend on developing autonomous driving than Tesla does, and they're doing it in a much more measured, judicious way. And they're starting to push back, and I think you'll see more of that. Just because, just like I think the Tesla EVs have set back the environmental movement, okay, by making inflated claims about how they're good for the Earth, right. the full self-driving claims are setting back the autonomous driving movement also by creating expectations that are unrealistic and creating the possibility of dangers that could create bad publicity and retard the entire adoption. Because when you think about all the dangerous drivers there are out there, yeah, autonomous driving would be a great thing to have at some point if it were better than humans who are easily distracted. But we're just so far from that. And what you're doing is you're hurting the entire, you're hurting the entire enterprise by making these inflated claims.
Yeah, and, his claim that, like you're saying, Teslas are appreciating assets and not depreciating assets, which, of course, is preposterous. That, yeah. coupled with the idea that he's going to have robo-taxis on the road within the next year, according to him, stands at odds with even things that bulls say, like Ross Gerber, who tweeted out last week or 2 weeks ago, hey, they're still kind of working on how to deal with L.A. traffic.
Yeah,
it's like, yeah. you can't figure Ross. That out.
Well, listen, let's talk before we go. I don't know if you have anything on your list to talk about.
I have two things left that I want to talk about, if that's okay with you.
Sure. And then I want to talk a little bit about the Skabushka case.
Well, that's one of them. Okay, so we'll do that last.
Okay.
the one thing I wanted to ask you about was whether, semi-off topic, was whether or not you saw the contract that the Boring Company won in Las Vegas.
Hmm. Well,
the transcript will just say groaning noise there.
Where's that Chicago train that they were supposed to have started by now? Okay. If ever you were to underestimate the stupidity of government across the country, then I think you could hold up the example of the Las Vegas people approving this contract with the Boring Company just to show, no, there's no end to stupidity. That tunnel will never be built. If it's built, it will be way over budget. Of course, the Boring Company was the low bidder. Big surprise there.
Right.
They'll say anything. What do they own? They own a secondhand drill, and they've never drilled a tunnel. And there were people who in Las Vegas who objected to this, like including the mayor, saying, wait a minute, these guys have never – they have a zero track record. It will end in woe if it ever gets started, okay? I don't know what to say. The Thunderfoot, that Thunderfoot has a brilliant video about the Los Angeles tunnel and about Elon Musk's tunneling claims. And if you could watch that video and still think it was a wise thing to do to award a contract to Musk or his Boring Company, well, you'll get what you deserve.
Yeah, he goes through the economics of it, and he goes through the fact that pretty much what they're doing, putting these cars on skates now, has been done for like 100 years.
Yeah.
And
I think
he even conceded, there was an article, forget where it was, but somebody wrote an article basically saying this whole thing is a scam. And it wasn't a normal source. It was like BuzzFeed or something. But somebody basically wrote an article, said this Boring Company tunnel thing is a scam. We were promised frictionless electric sleds holding, 20 people at a time. And you remember those renderings that were released like 2 years ago, right? Of the car kind of futuristic looking going underground. And what do we have? Well, we got a fucking car going through a tunnel.
Well, what is the Las Vegas thing? It's really basically a subway, right?
Right.
So Elon Musk didn't invent the subway, okay? It's a subway tunnel. And so he's going to drill a subway tunnel, which people do all the time, okay? It's just that the Boring Company has never done it, and I doubt it can do it for the price it promised. And they lack the capital to do it anyway. But fine, Las Vegas, have him drill your subway tunnel. It's not the tunnel concept that he showed off in Los Angeles, which is completely idiotic. It's maybe a subway tunnel that makes sense to move people from point A to point B in Las Vegas fast. Just like, you know, we have subways all over the world.
Right.
And I think the people who were looking at the numbers said, you know, it would make much more sense to have an elevated track do this instead of a subway. But all right, so build your subway. But there's nothing new or different about a subway.
The company that they outbid or undercut or whatever you want to call it, apparently Mark Spiegel was telling me, is some like extremely well-known European company with 100 years of operating history, with an expertise in building monorails and building subways. And I think Tesla undercut them by a couple $1 million.
Yeah.
So well, the shift in quality from probably what they would be getting to what they're going to get is certainly going to be a case study somewhere, especially when they drill into that first, you know, power line by accident and take out all the fucking power on the Vegas Strip.
Well, I assume they can drill competently. There are plenty of people who drill subway tunnels all the time. If they buy some good equipment, they can probably do it. They'll never do it for the cost they promised, and it'll be fun to watch. But it's just an amusing sideline.
So should we wrap up with an update on Skabushka? And
yeah,
if you would be so kind as to kind of take it from the top, too, in case somebody's listening for the first time, they're not familiar with the situation, maybe take it from the top.
Okay, so I've never actually met Skabushka in person, but he's a young man named Randeep Hothi, who has been doing really superb work trying to gauge Tesla production. Back, you know, in 2018, the question was, how many cars is Tesla producing? Because Musk famously said, you know, you can be sure of this 100%. By the end of 2018, we'll be making 10,000 Model 3 cars a week, which, of course, didn't happen. They didn't even make half that number on any kind of consistent basis. But Skabushka would go to the factory and watch cars roll out and record how many cars were being built. And Tesla learned that he was there because he would post it on Twitter. And he's been on their hit list for a long time and regarded as an enemy of Tesla. So back in February, Skabushka was at the Fremont plant, and he drove in. He was going to take a look at the sales center and service center and talk to the people in there and see what they would tell him about Model 3 inventory and what its levels were. But he was in his car. Tesla evidently picked up his license plate when he drove in, and they got a hit on it. In other words, this is this Skabushka guy. We want you to send security out. So security goes out to confront him, and the people inside meanwhile call the police. And Skabushka is approached by these two guys who look like they, you know, it's a little bit menacing for him. So he immediately leaves, okay, the parking lot. That's incident number one. We'll call that the parking lot incident. Then, we learn that Tesla did call the police. The police did come, and there's some interesting history there. What happened is the police came and they talked to the Tyler James, who was the security guy who may or may not work for Tesla, that went and pounded on Hothi's window. And Tyler James said the guy, you know, drove off. He agreed it wasn't it, he said on the way out this guy hit me. Well, he nicked my trouser. And yes, he agreed that it didn't appear that Hothi intended to do this. And the police looked at a video Tesla had security videos. This guy had something on his camera as well. And the police write a report, and they say it appears that Hothi drove away at a slow rate of speed. Okay, Tesla wants us to call this a hit and run, but we don't see any intent here to do anything. He went away at a slow rate of speed. So 3 weeks later, Tesla calls the cops back for another. We want you to interview this guy again. Now he says he's been to see a doctor, and he had a little flare up on his knee, though there's no photos or pictures or anything, and it's all better. But still, serious. Would you guys look at hit and run? So Tesla takes all the the cops take the tapes. They show it to the prosecutors. The prosecutors look at it and say, hey, there's no hit and run here. Case closed. OK, no intent. No. If the guy was hit, which is not even clear. OK, then there's nothing to do here. We're not going to prosecute this guy. Sorry, Tesla. And so, we don't find out about any of this till later, of course. Then in May, Hothi sees this Model 3 right in advance of Autonomy Day, their Autonomy Investor Day on April 22nd. Well, on April 16, Hothi is driving, and there's a Model 3 with cameras mounted on the roof and some guys in the back seats with cameras. And he thinks, wow, I remember the painted black video from 2016 where Tesla showed off this car that they said was driving autonomously, when in fact it turns out later there were dozens or scores of cuts in the video because there were interruptions. So he wants to follow it, so he has some documentation in case this is going to feature in the Autonomy Day presentation. And he follows the car for half an hour or so. He takes photos of it, puts them up at Twitter. So Tesla sees this, and it gets a TRO against him. That means they went to court. They didn't notify Hothi. They could have easily notified him on Twitter. They didn't notify him at all. And they said to the judge, this is a dangerous, violent man. And we're going to show you back in February, he struck one of our employees at a high rate of speed, even though the police report says, drove away slowly. And he's threatening violent action, and now he endangered the life of our employees who were in that Tesla Model 3 by swerving recklessly near them. And we want a restraining order, keeping this guy away from our factory and keeping him away from any car, et cetera. And so the court grants it. It's an automatic. It was done on a form called workplace violence. And these TROs are granted just automatically, but the court sets it for a hearing. So we started a GoFundMe for Skabushka to get him counsel. And we located some counsel in the Bay Area who has a good background in First Amendment law, and quickly moved for a short continuance so that we could put together our response. And we also asked that we be allowed a little discovery. That is, we want some limited information from Tesla. And so the judge granted the continuance, and he said, look, usually in these temporary injunction hearings, they're done in a very abbreviated fashion, and we don't allow discovery, but you guys can agree to discovery, and if you can't agree to discovery, you can take it up with the court at the hearing. So we wrote the Tesla lawyer a letter saying, hey, here's some things we would like to have in advance of the hearing. Will you agree? And he wrote back and said, no, we don't agree. And what did we ask for? We said, the police have the video of that event on February 21, but we don't have it. Could we see that video? Because that's the basis of your claim that this guy is a violent, dangerous man. No, we won't show you that video. Okay, well, your Model 3, it has 8 integrated cameras. In fact, you boast about how they're sending data back to headquarters all the time, that this data is going to become part of your great neural network of information that will make full self-driving achievable soon. And it had 2 more mounted on the roof, and you had guys in the back seats with cameras. Can we please see the video from the time that they started filming Hothi to, the time that he exited stage left? Nope, we're not sharing any of that with you, okay? So that's interesting. The things that could prove their claim, they refused to give us. We went to the hearing a week or so ago, and the court that has to handle these injunctions, they're it's a zoo, okay? You've got people often not represented by counsel who are in domestic abuse situations or something, and they get up and scream and shout at each other, and the judge has to patiently try to pare back and get to the facts. We were on a crowded docket, and we were at the end of the docket, and so the reporters who showed up had to sit through 3 or 4 hours of these cases being called and testimony being taken and decisions being made. And then the judge called us up and said, us, I'm talking about Mr. Spurline, the attorney, and Mr. Hothi, his client, and said, I'm not going to be able to, and then Mr. Zachary Alinder, who was representing Tesla, who, by the way, came with no witnesses. And he said, today, I'm sorry. And it's evident that we need to put you at the front of a docket and give you a lot of time, because I can see that this case is complicated. And so what's your calendar look like? Well, between the judge's vacation calendar and Mr. Alinder's vacation calendar, Mr. Spurline's, the first date they could agree was July 27th, more than 2 months away. So they agree we're going to continue this till July 27th. And Mr. Spurline said, now, Judge, you know, we have asked for some discovery, and we now have plenty of time to get the discovery. It's very narrow. Can we do that in the meantime? And Mr. Alinder said, no, Judge, they're not allowed to have any discovery. We object to that. So the judge said, I'll tell you what, write me a letter and explain to me what discovery you want and why you need it, and I'll make a decision. So Mr. Spurline has written that letter to the court. You can find it online if you want to look at the docket. It's a good letter. And it lays out how narrow our requests are and why it's crucial to have it. And Mr. Alinder has not responded yet. But we'll get ready for that hearing on July 27. And, you know, I feel like in any fair universe, the court will deny this temporary injunction. And then we'll have some things to say to Tesla. I would point out that... you know, Mr. Alinder, before the hearing that we went to, a day or two before, he sent a note to Mr. Spurline. And the note was, hey, how about we just call the whole thing off, okay? You have your guy agree he won't come on the factory grounds again, and we'll drop our lawsuit. And that's what's called a settlement negotiation, okay? And everywhere, in every jurisdiction I know of, settlement negotiations are inadmissible. Okay, the court does not want to hear them as evidence because it wants to encourage settlement. And if you punish people for saying things in settlement negotiations, you're going to discourage it. So right. Any judge is going to say that is irrelevant and it is inadmissible, and I don't want to hear about it. Okay, so Mr. Spurline responded and he said, "Look, here's what we need. We're happy to drop the case, let you drop the case, and we'll give you a release and you'll give us a release, but." We need Tesla to say that its allegations against Hothi are wrong.
Right.
That he's not a violent, dangerous person. He didn't intend to injure anybody. He didn't injure anybody, and he didn't endanger anybody. And if you'll agree to that, we'll agree that you're off the hook. We won't file any claim against you later, and we'll release you. So that went nowhere. Tesla wouldn't agree to that, of course. And then. You know, this Alinder files a reply with the court to our, you know, we had responded to their petition and he filed a reply. And, you know, like the day of the hearing, the morning of the hearing, he files this paper where he says, not only is this Hothi a dangerous guy, but he has now refused to stay away from the factory again. He's again refused. So in other words, he was using the settlement discussion as the basis for that claim, which is so filthy, dirty, unethical. What it tells me is that Zachary Alinder, Alinder, you can Google him, the lawyer for Tesla in this matter, is just as unethical, just as willing to mislead as his client. So he is the perfect dog for this master. And everything he wrote was really disgusting garbage, avoiding the main point. He refuses to turn over the evidence that could establish Tesla's claim. This is just pure character assassination. And that's what I'll say about it. That's where we are. And I look forward to the July 27th hearing.
Yeah, it seems like, what do they call that, gaslighting, you know, trying to just make such a big fuss that it kind of draws away from the actual facts that are going to... My question to you is, excuse me, my question to you is if... Well, I actually have two questions. The first is, what do you think the likelihood is that they just withdraw this prior to, you know, then they have 2 months to sit about what a precarious position they're in, even though they haven't postured as such, what the odds are of them simply withdrawing it on their own? And then the second question is, what does it possibly put them in an actionable position by making these allegations, if you're able to conduct discovery and prove demonstrably to a judge that the allegations were false, does that put Tesla in an actionable position?
Well, a few things. First, you know, I wonder if Zachary Allender is even being paid. We hear reports that a lot of Tesla attorneys are going unpaid. Tesla's really behind on a lot of its bills, and I suspect it's behind on a lot of its legal bills. It's got hundreds of cases it's defending. So he can have a few months to think about whether Tesla's going to pay his bills. The problem for Skabushka, I should say, is this TRO, just the existence of it, is devastating to his reputation.
Right, yep.
You had some of these Tesla crazies writing to the University of Michigan, where he's a graduate student in philosophy, saying, you need to expel this guy. And that, you know, people at the University of Michigan said, what's going on, Mr. Hoth? You need to tell us what's happening here. They are threatening to get him expelled from school. They are threatening, and it would be devastating to him to get a job anywhere with the accusations that he's violent in the workplace. I mean, that's a real risk for an employer to hire. So we have got to vindicate his reputation. That's just crucial to do. That's why the apology from Tesla was requested. We have to vindicate his reputation. Now, the accusations that Tesla made were made very cleverly in a legal pleading. And in the United States, under defamation law, legal pleadings are privileged. In other words, you can say anything. It can be the most defamatory statement in the world. But if you say it in a legal pleading, you get away with it. You can't sue somebody for defamation for stuff said in a court pleading. And that's where Tesla has made the allegations, in a court pleading, okay? So that it's shielded itself from a defamation claim. And so what is the – would Tesla try to drop this? Well, maybe it won't go away quite so easily as they think, okay? Will Randy Pothy have some claim to make it against Tesla? I'm not his trial counsel. His trial counsel is in California and is capable of assessing all that. And I don't want to speculate about it, but I will say this. It's crucial to vindicate his reputation. If Tesla wants to do that agreeably by admitting it was wrong and that it should never have made these accusations in the first place, great. And if it wants to do it the hard way, well, we're ready for that too.
Awesome. And Mr. Skeptic, I want to leave it right there with you. First and foremost, I want to thank you so much for taking the time to run through all of that for everybody. I just thought it was important that people kind of hear it from the top so that people have an understanding of where we are. The second thing is, on behalf of Skabushka, thank you for all the help that you've provided him in setting up the GoFundMe account, which is extraordinary success and raised over $116,000 in very short order to work toward trying to vindicate Mr. Hothi's reputation. And finally, thank you very much for taking time out of your holiday, which I'm sure you have obligations and would rather be relaxing with family and friends, to come on and class up my joint here a little bit this morning. I can't tell you how much I appreciate that.
My pleasure, Chris. One final thought about that GoFundMe. First, thank you for your contribution, which has been terrific, and the people who support you here.
That was my patrons, actually.
Yeah,
your patrons. I matched my patrons' contribution. So thank you very much to my patrons that helped support that cause.
They came to bat, and hundreds of other people did too. I mean, I think we're close to like 400 different donors. Some of them very big, some of them small, but everyone appreciated. I would say this, if we need more money, I will be back telling people we need more money. Right now, we're doing fine. And if there's money left over, we'll, of course, return it pro rata. But I'm hopeful that we have enough to carry on for the time being, and very much appreciate all the support everyone has given. And there's, you know, there's no way I can express my gratitude or Mr. Hothi's gratitude adequately, but it's very much appreciated. So thank you and have a lovely holiday.
Thank you so much. We'll talk soon, hopefully.
Yeah.
All right. Bye-bye. That was the one, the only Montana skeptic. Unfortunately, unbeknownst to him, I know he doesn't like hearing it, but kind of becoming a little bit of a leader for the Tesla Q community. And Elon Musk, you know, you made him, brother. You made him. When you went after him, when you called his boss, when you threatened to sue him, Montana Skeptic was just a guy writing on Seeking Alpha. Now he has become kind of like this iconoclast. And as you can hear, he's obviously kind of helping direct proceedings within the Tesla Skeptic community. And I find him to just be a gentleman, a scholar, a lovely person to speak to. And I am extremely grateful for his time. Just as I am extremely grateful for your time to join me today, especially if you're listening on the holiday. Hope you're kicking back with a cold one. And finally, thank you so much to those who continue to contribute to the podcast through my Patreon. It means so much to me, and it keeps me motivated, keeps me on the ball, keeps me on point to make sure that I continue to deliver for you guys. So it is truly a pleasure to be heard by you guys, and was truly a pleasure. You know what? When you run out of fucking words, maybe it's just time to go. Enjoy the holiday, degenerates. I'm out. Peace.